Hi. I came out during the dark heart of the Reagan years, and I was a little gay teenager, a little gay awkward teenager in Skaggsville, Maryland. Growing up just across from a steer farm, I managed to be kind of a small town kid despite living in between two giant cities. And I was also a big fan of French cinema and Warhol and Lou Reed, and I came out and I thought, this is it. I am going to be a badass. I'm going to be dangerous and interesting because that's what being gay is all about. Unfortunately, it was the dark heart of the Reagan years, and everything they told you about sex was, well, you can't do that because it'll kill you. And you can't do that because it'll kill you. And you don't want anything to fly in your general direction because it'll kill you, or go into you at any point because it'll kill you. And they were still kind of inventing this proper rule of how things worked, but I took the lesson as, oh my God, everything about sex will kill me. So my attempts to be kind of a dangerous, badass libertine were mostly unsuccessful. And I had to content myself with just being surrealistic most of the time. Fast forward a few years, I ended up working as the official spiritual go-go dancer at the American Visionary Art Museum, where I kick off the kinetic sculpture race every year with a blessing, a little homily, and then I go-go dance wildly in religious garb. And it was after one of these that a man came up to me and he said, "Hey, you know, you're a pretty good dancer for a fat dude." And I said, "Yeah, I am." And he said, "You know, have you ever really thought about getting into the world of novelty stripping?" And I said, "No, because I was pretty much unaware that there was a world of novelty stripping." But at the time, I was kind of under semi-employed, and any part-time work I could get was useful. And as he described it, the money was actually pretty good. And what it meant was, usually in context of a office party thrown by the mean salesman at an organization, they would have some poor hapless woman or occasionally man on their birthday and would taunt them with the, "Hey, we got you a stripper." And I would show up basically as the fat version of your traditional stripper tropes. So they'd say, "I hear a police siren," and I would come in as the fat cop, with my uniform a little too tight and my butt crack hanging out. Or I would come in as the fat copier repairman, or the fat electrician, or the fat UPS man. And it was great. I had a lot of really small costumes for this career. And I would leave at the end of each event feeling humiliated along with the victim of the prank, but I got a check. And there was one day the man that hired me called me up and he said, "Hey, I have a gig that you might be interested in. Now, it's not sexual," which is something that you usually say before you're going to introduce something that is most definitively sexual. And he said, "Yeah, I've got a friend who's starting up this series of bukkake parties at firehouse bingo halls in Anne Arundel County. And what we need is just somebody to kind of be the MC and tell the stories and announce the schedules and liven things up." I knew what a bukkake party was because at the time I had a wicked crush on a slightly older man with a very kinky sexual history, and who's going to kill me when he hears the podcast. And I was still the little Skaggsville kid. I wanted to be a libertine, but I never succeeded. But I thought, you know what, I'm going to do this job, and it's going to establish my street cred as someone who's kinky and dangerous and something of a badass. Plus, the money was really good, and so, for those of you who are not familiar with bukkake, it's named after a Japanese practice of serving noodles by dumping sauce on top of them. And what it amounts to sexually is you have a large party, usually in an airport Ramada Inn. And at this party, you'll have 30 to 50 men ejaculating on a smaller number of men, women, large stainless steel bowls, other things like this. And it did not seem like my cup of tea, but I was assured I didn't have to participate, which was good because I didn't want any of that stuff flying my way because I'd grown up in the dark heart of the Reagan years. So I showed up, I prepared, I researched a little bit. I was going to be the MC, I was going to be sartorial, and I showed up that day. I pulled my little four-door economy sedan in front of the firehouse bingo hall, set foot inside there, and from the very first second I knew I had misjudged my character. Because the room was full of men in various degrees of undress and leather, and I was wearing a white suit and white shoes and black suspenders, and a black string tie, and I'd carefully waxed my mustache, and oh my God, I looked like Colonel Sanders. And the event's organizer was a wonderful Edgewater man, and he said, "What on earth are you wearing?" Never mind, we just got to go with it, and I am, you know, I'm used to it. It's the show must go on, even if I am dressed as Colonel Sanders. So I have a whole agenda, and I get up there, and I announce, "Welcome to our bukkake party." I describe the pattern of events that are going to happen that night and some of the activities we have planned. I set the rules and the boundaries, what's allowed and what's not allowed. I indicate where the stacks of clean towels are and where the refreshment table is and where you can get beer for a low, low price. And without much further ado, the event starts. And I don't know if you've ever been to a children's party where somebody has given all the kids silly string. But it was a little bit like that. And to me, any desire I had to be kinky and dangerous and a badass kind of went away, and I ran, not quite screaming, but just as quickly as I could to be somewhere where nothing was flying at my face. And I just hung back by the refreshment table, by all the punch bowls and the little nibbly things, which I made sure to indulge in before the people came back from the thing. And I had kind of chit-chat along the way with the organizer of the event, who was a real piece of Anne Arundel County trash. And I know that sounds like a snob because I grew up in Howard County, but no, this guy was a piece of work. And we're talking about just generic stuff, just chit-chat, and he'd interrupt periodically and point, "You over there, if you're going to be pissing on each other, use the plastic." And he turns back to me and he goes, "The last time I left this place smelling like pee, my mom was so mad." And over the course of this evening, my eyebrows just keep going higher and higher. And my blood pressure. And I'm getting kind of freaked out. And I'm just thinking, you know, it's just a job. It's just a job, you know. And as the evening's winding down, I swing over and I'm like, "I'm going to have some punch." I hit the punch bowl that I think is marked the alcohol one. And I'm like, "I'm just going to have a drink. It's fine. I only have to drive about 8 miles to get home." So I get my punch and everybody's filing out and I'm talking to the host. And he's made a lot of money. He's very happy. He counts out the money to me as I'm finishing my little red solo cup of punch. And he looks and he says, "Which punch bowl did you get that from?" And I said, "The red one." He said, I said, "Why?" "No, nothing. No reason. You just have a good night." And I walk out of there and I walk to my little four-door economy sedan and I start heading back for my home in Laurel. And I get about a half mile before I notice in my rearview mirror that the streetlights are chasing me. I mean, like, it's like the wires are attached to my car, and I can see them, and they're getting closer. And I'm thinking, oh, they're going to kill me. Except I have enough of peace of mind to know, no, what's going to kill me is that I had something in that red punch bowl that is affecting my brain. But it's affecting my brain enough so that I can only halfway get to a rational place. And what I think is, I've got to get home. I can't stop because the streetlights will kill me. If I get home, they can't get into my house. But I'm driving on some kind of drug, so what I'm going to do is drive real slow. On the shoulder. And the problem here is that there really isn't a shoulder between that firehouse bingo hall and my home. And what I really was driving real slow through was every front yard in Anne Arundel County. And I was very upset by this. And if you had looked out of the window of your house and somewhere along Brockbridge Road or something like that, you would have seen a small four-door economy sedan slowly chugging through your yard at about the speed of a riding mower, running over your mailbox and your bird bath and your gazing ball, and in one particularly loud and difficult encounter, a half-buried bathtub with a Madonna statue in it. Driven by Colonel Sanders, who was crying, who was at the time crying hysterically and yelling out the window that he promised he wouldn't do it again. And the thing is, I don't know how I got home exactly, because I woke up and my white suit's on the floor and I look out in front of my house and my car is not there and I'm like, oh my God, I've killed somebody. I just know it. But I put myself into a little mental meditation state and I'm like, where did I leave the car? What did I do? And it comes to me and I'm like, oh my God. So I walk over to the racetrack and then I walk around to the back of the racetrack to the little trailer park there. And I walk through the trailer park until I get to the trailer of my high school girlfriend, Lurleen, where my car is parked almost entirely on top of a Harley. And I basically go to the car, and I'm very quietly trying to get the door open to get out. And the door to the trailer flings open, and a man I have never seen pops out, and he goes, "Is that your car?" And I said, "Yeah, yeah." He goes, "You knocked over my bike." I said, I'm really sorry. You want my insurance information?" He goes, "No, just help me pick it up. It'll just give it character." He said, "What were you doing here anyway last night? You came in, parked, and we're shouting and everything, and I couldn't do anything until it, and you'd already left, and it was just weird." And I said, "Oh, well, I emceed this bukkake party at a firehouse bingo hall, and I'm pretty sure I accidentally did some horse tranquilizers. And then I drove here, and for some insane reason, I thought this would be a good place to park." And he goes, "Ugh, I've been there." He goes, "Yeah, that's a hell of a thing, but you're a real badass." And I thought, huh, maybe I am. And in 2017, you know, being gay is the least interesting thing about me. And I can't say I'm much of a badass anymore, but I was once.